Well, hello there. Oh, I've got lots of letters for Santa today. And every year, they're the same. Some ask for toys, but a lot ask questions.
A yo-yo?
If you wish to give me a present?
I'd like to be a dentist.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel. You're as cuddly as a cactus. You're as charming as an eel.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Christmas Specials We Love podcast. Very well, maybe our last one of this holiday season, which went way too fast. Tonight's episode, or today's episode, is going to be on the Grinch. Much requested, super famous. You know, our multi-generational panel is going to definitely break this down for you. I feel like, once again, we're going to be split right down the middle. And I will say, my whole life, I love the Grinch. I was always in because it just reminded me of Christmas. And it was, but now this show and the pushback we've received on some of the other specials now has made me think more. And I realize with my go-tos every year, this has become less and less of a go-to. And then watching it now, I understand why, which I'll get into a little later. That's just my thoughts. So for me, not really feeling it. I love the sentiment it brings, and I love how you can call someone a Grinch. And then we've got rides, and we've got movies, and we've got a Grinch podcast even, which I love because it extends the spirit of the holiday, which is one of the purposes of our show. But at the same time, the actual special, not so much. Something I'll watch with my children when they're little, yes. But as far as staying power, not so much. Ann, I'm going to go to you. Let's start with Ann Sleeman from The Lost Generation. Your thoughts.
Kev, I was hoping I was going to go last because I feel like I'm going to sound like the Grinch. And I know, Ev, you kind of hinted once that I like all the specials so much. And
did I? Okay.
The Grinch isn't my fave of all of them. In fact, it was funny when it came on network TV, I watched it with my husband. And when it finished, I was like, yeah, there's really not that much there. So,
well, in Whoville, they say that Anne and Kevin's heart shrank three sizes that day.
Christian and
or
I
maybe
predicted
they'll grow
you'd
back
say
by
that.
The end of
well,
the,
maybe they'll grow back after they the see the it show. Again. But I'm sorry, Anne. I just felt like I needed to jump in with that before we went too
no,
far
I,
too far down this road.
I had a feeling you were going to say something like that.
Maybe Evan's variation on what you remember him saying is that you don't like all of them. You only like the bad ones.
Or the ones
well,
you don't
I,
like.
Listen. I told Ann if it was about the dog and if it was about the, if all I saw was the part where he steals the toys and he hurts the little girl, then he sees what he's done and tries to stop it and his heart grows three sizes. That to me is amazing. It's just a lot to get there. It's like a lot of people don't like Drummer Boy until the moment where he plays the drum. I get it. He plays the drums for the child and he has his moment. So I salute that moment where right. his heart grows. And I love that. I love that. But to get there, it's a lot to get there.
Yeah. I always pictured Kevin. I always felt like you appreciated a good face turn more than anybody else. And
yes.
we had to wait for it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you wrestling fans would know that's when, yes, when the bad guy or the heel turns face, as we say, becomes a good guy. But you have to eat a lot of green eggs and ham, and it's a lot to get there. pun intended. And continue, and then let's go around the panel, like go over to Christian, and then I can't wait for Evan's take.
Right,
as always, the anchor, Evan.
So like you, Kev, okay. There are parts of it that I liked. I love Max the dog. I mean, so adorable, so fun. And I liked that it was modeled after Seuss's dog. And I thought that was really cool. I like when the Grinch turns and talks to the TV with Boris Karloff's voice. I like that. I like the scene, actually, that I think is also in Cat in the Hat with all the toys when they're all playing with the toys and the crazy, like, very Dr. Seussy musical instruments. So I like those little pieces. But for me, it's kind of just, I don't know, it's I don't, it's not on my every year list anymore. And now I remember why. And I think it's too in my face everywhere I turn, even on, you know, you're watching a football game and the commercial for Citizens Citibank, I think it is, has the Grinch and he's not still redeemed. And I think that's what gets my goat is when we see the Grinch in pop culture now, he's still grouchy. And it's like, wait a minute, dude, didn't your heart grow three sizes? Shouldn't you be redeemed? Shouldn't he like have a new look and a new attitude? So maybe that's what gets my goat. And I've been nervous for this conversation just because I don't want hate texts coming in because I don't love the Grinch as much because we've gotten a ton of requests via text for the Grinch. And I'm sorry to say, I don't want to say I hate it, but it's definitely not one of my faves.
Well, and as we say in Boston, you are nervous. K-N-E-R-V-I-S-S. Nervous.
I'm super nervous. Wicked nervous.
Yeah. So, or very, very nervous. Okay. Yes. So, Christian, now tell us why this is amazing.
Well, so to some of the points you're both making, we are absolutely Grinched out. We are, you know, up, I've had it up to here with all the Grinchiness. There is so much Grinch, you know, I mean, especially like, you know, the Jim Carrey movie, which I don't know that we needed. It's very well made, but it's, it, you know, it's one of those like, oh, technically they made a good movie, but I don't want to watch it. This is not one that I watch every year, but it is kind of universally people like it. You know, before we started, Anne and Evan, the band Queen came up. I love the band Queen. If I ever hear We Will Rock You or We Are the Champions again, I'm not interested. And right. So for that reason, I don't watch The Grinch every year. This was the first year that I watched it with my kids where my six-year-old daughter Lucy is big enough to remember. They had seen it before, but she was really little. She loves Max. And there
I think for little kids, for kids under age of 10 and even under age of, I think, 8, seeing a cartoon and music and cute rhymes, that I'm like, I will watch this with my daughter. This will be great to watch with a little kid, but not the classic staying power for me. But Anne, you know, I was saying to Anne when we were talking on our pre-show, sometimes we get attached to things that aren't the greatest quality, but we get confused in our brains and think they're quality. But really, it's more about nostalgia and childhood. And I feel like with this, that's one of those examples. Whereas, and that's why I get upset with It's a Wonderful Life, or when people will tell me other movies are better, I'll say, It's a Wonderful Life. Yes, it's a child film you see in childhood, but also in and of itself is an amazing film. Whereas maybe you watched Home Alone on repeat all through your childhood. So now it's a tradition and it's amazing. It's not It's a Wonderful Life. Stop it. Right. It's not going to be in discussion for one of the top 10 films. I will also say that about the Rankin and Bass classics, the real true classics. To me, they hold up in any, the great ones, they really hold up at any time, and it's not about nostalgia. Whereas with this, I feel it's nostalgia. It's something you saw every year growing up. So you watch it and you go along with it. And just to get to that moment where his heart grows three sizes and all that other stuff. But to me, it's not the whole 22-minute journey. No, I'm not down for it. Right, so Christian, continue. And then obviously Evan is just waiting to be let out of his pen. From what I understand, he's been medicated. He has spoken to his counselors. He feels like he's in a safe space. It's all good. All right.
He's loosening up in the bullpen, but he's not even throwing hard yet. You know, it's just a little soft toss right now. He's getting ready, but
he does have the best background with the Grinch. With you know, so
I am the only one that actually has the Grinch in it.
you keep Grinchmas in your way, and I keep Kissmas. All right, we all do what we all do in our homes each year. So, watching the Grinch with my kids, I was struck the same way when I watched Rudolph with them. The really good ones, the really well-made ones, you know, there's a reason Rudolph is the goat. You're like, oh yeah, this really works. And it wasn't written in an hour. It wasn't rushed into production. You know, you can take a song and turn it into a movie. This one has the blessing that it's under half an hour. And I think that's important. If they had tried to stretch this into an hour, I don't know that I ever would have finished it. You know, they took the book. They didn't. Let's have a backup story about the banking crisis in Whoville that afternoon, and you know, single out somebody besides Cindy Lou Who. You know, so I love that it's streamlined. I love that it's such a simple idea. Yeah, you don't need all this stuff for Christmas. You know, it's still Christmas in your heart, and the Grinch is like, oh, I, guess I was wrong about all of that. I agree with Kevin. It might even work better as a 15-minute, you know, short of like put some other Doctor Who's, Dr. Seuss stories, you know, into like an hour special, do some 15 minutes. But watching it with my kids, it's simple. And my daughter, in exactly the ways she's looking away, she doesn't want to watch the Grinch steal everything. And I remind her, you watch because then it feels so much better. You know, 'cause she knew enough that she knew it was going to end well. And it's like, yeah. So you look at the bad stuff because it's going to feel so much better when it has a happy ending. And, you know, she really felt vindicated for Max. I think that's, you know, the Whovilles, whatever, Cindy Lou Who, very cute, very articulate for a 2-year-old, as it turns out. But besides that, I think, you know, this isn't an every year for me. So that's probably one of the reasons I appreciated watching it with my kids, where they can not just watch it, but like talk about it and understand it. And I think my son just, you know, he kind of likes the song because you hear the song all the time.
Right.
And, you know, when we talked about Little Drummer Boy, we talked about how perfect the song is, you know, having it in the special. This has that fantastic song.
Yes.
You know?
And you're right. We should not ignore that. The song's incredible and not sung by Boris Karloff, but you think it is. But great, the song's amazing.
Thurl Ravenscroft. We want to shout out Thurl Ravenscroft, by the way, who's the voice of the Grinch song. Yes.
Okay, now, Evan, please let us know. We're all waiting to hear from Gen Y. We've heard from Gen X. We want to hear from Gen Y.
I love this. I forgot how much I loved this. And I think this is a rare case.
Oh, I love it.
Yes. I don't usually use the bell on this show, but I felt like that earned it.
All right.
Now, wait. The bell didn't trigger you, right, Ev?
I don't know what that bell means.
I don't either.
It means that Kevin kind of predicted what you were going to say, but also I love your comment.
There's a deeper meaning behind the bell because he doesn't know what it means, which could mean it's triggering.
That's true.
I digress. Go ahead, please.
I'm cool so with the bell.
You actually like a special.
No,
I love it.
Like, if this is to be our last episode of the year, I think this is the best one we've done to end on. For my money, it is. Like, I forgot how much I love this. I watched this a lot as a kid. Maybe it's nostalgia. I don't care. I don't care if this is just nostalgia. I forgot how much I love this. Wow. I just love watching the Grinch have a ton of fun stealing everything from all the Whos. I think what really sells this for me is just the animation. Like, there's just this charm to 2D animation that this film takes advantage of so hard. And I love
what do you,
that.
So like, what do you mean like, by that? You actually, the style? Because it is stylistic. You like the...
It's the style, but also the way that it, like... I think there's something that gets a little bit lost in, like, the more recent 3D animation. Like, the way the Grinch's... Like, the shape of his face changes with every emotion that he has. Yeah. And, like, the way his hair goes out at the one point. I feel like I've seen that gif 1,000 times. But, like, I love that side of animation.
Let me just interject, because it is animated by probably the GOAT... Chuck Jones, who did so much Warner Brothers. Yeah. But just in general, Evan, I mean, hand-drawn animation cells from this era and long before, it's so much more fun to watch. It's crazy the stuff you can get characters to do now, and it's impressive technically, but when you think about like how many thousands of pictures it took for the Grinch to turn and look one way and then look at the camera with that big smile, you know, that's literally like 1,000 pictures probably, you know, so it's great to think of.
I understand why we don't do hand-drawn anymore, but there's something that I love about it, and I feel like I miss 2D animation. I'm just old enough to remember it.
You're reminding us of, we take that for granted because we grew up with that kind of animation. We had moments with Hanna-Barbera in the 60s that did really terrible, cheap, crappy animation, but we grew up, our childhoods were very rich with animation, whereas yours started getting into the 3D and computer generated and stuff that was much cheaper to produce. And I'm really glad you're kind of giving us like a knock upside the head to admire that, because you're right. Stylistically, you know, the things he's doing with his face and his finger. Think of the finger with the claw and what emotion that conjures. That's all old school quality animation.
Yeah, and I think there were over like 22,000 total drawings that made it up. So just the effort that went into it is definitely impressive. Amazing.
Evan, continue, please.
Yeah, I guess like I don't know that this is necessarily like a story that I connect to in that. Like, that's not the level I enjoy the special on. I wasn't even really thinking about that watching it today. I was just like, this is just made with so much joy, and like I think it's coming through. And for 22 minutes, that's fine. Like I any second that like the Grinch is preparing to steal the presents or doing it, or like Max is doing anything, it's just, I don't know. I love that, and I don't feel the need to like justify it, because it's just fun in a way that like, and I can understand people having that for the stop motion ones. Personally, I don't. I just don't think it has that kind of inherent charm. I think also though, like, and I saw it, and maybe we'll cover this in the production notes, but that like Dr. Seuss was heavily involved in this. And I think like any good book adaptation, the extra stuff in here that isn't in the original book is still very much in that like Dr. Seuss spirit. And I think that counts for a lot. Like, it's not, I haven't seen the Cumberbatch adaptation of this that came out a few years ago. I have seen the Jim Carrey one. And I think, Christian, you were knocking it earlier. I agree fully. Like, I'm not going to like hate on that movie, but we didn't.
Yeah,
need
no,
it.
It's like
you just need this.
Gus Van Sant did a shot for shot remake of Psycho with Vince Vaughn. Mm-hmm. And then the question is why, you know, like, because you can. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. I think we all learned that from Jurassic Park. There's two things I haven't said that I wanted to jump in, because it made me think of one of the, you know, the Mount Rushmore of Christmas specials. Charlie Brown Christmas. You feel that there's joy in the process of making that. And then also Charles Schulz heavily involved in that. When the creator who creates these characters and loves these characters are actually involved in the adaptation, I think it leads to a much better product, you know, and having Dr. Seuss involved in this, I think goes a long way. And correct me if I'm wrong, but those are back-to-back Christmases, right? Charlie Brown's like 66, this is 67, or they're pretty close to each other, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. You know what, Christian, there was sometimes though, it can go the other way where the creator's too close and makes a mess. So Mary Poppins.
Oh, yeah. She hated
that author. Hated, right? She was at odds with Disney. She just, till the premiere, she was still arguing with him about the edit at the premiere.
You're kidding.
No, she hated the way the movie turned out. It was exactly what she didn't want.
Wow.
Yeah. So you
my all-time faves.
Sometimes, in the case of the novelists, for example, a lot of the great novelists came to Hollywood in the 40s. And when they were asked to adapt their works into screenwriting, they couldn't do it. They really struggled to have success. So sometimes it's either the format is a different format for them, or creatively they're in too deep.
Yeah.
And these, the characters, they're too close to them. It's their baby. They don't want it tampered with. So I, you know, you hear this all the time with artists. And then later, after the fact, it's so successful, sometimes they come around and go, oh, wow, I get it now. This was the right way to go. And then others, the people that I like, the crazies who go to the grave being crazy, are like, no, the Mary Poppins was a terrible movie. It was the worst, you know.
Yeah, her name's P.L. Travers, and I do believe that she died hating the movie. I don't think she ever came around on it. And you know, for her sake, I'm glad she didn't see the sequel that came out a few years ago, because if she didn't like the original, she really would have hated that. So.
Absolutely. Oh, well, and then also the making of, I will say, came out during the holidays. And yeah, I think for this year, Candy Cane Lane was great. Last year, Violent Night. Maybe a year or two before Fat Man. I'm still not seeing a lot of great clashes come out, but I will say the making of Mary Poppins that Tom Hanks starred in, even though it's not a Christmas movie, it came out during the holidays, and it just has a really warm feel. Very nice film to see, I think, over these next few weeks. But I digress.
I'll just chime in that film was called Saving Mr. Banks, and Emma Thompson played P.L. Travers in it. And that was a great film. And I guess, Kev, you didn't get a chance to check out John Woo's Silent Night, and there was also a film called It's a Wonderful Knife. So, you know, there's a it's a niche of Christmas movie, but there have been
Are they good or are they just gory? Yeah, because yeah.
I agree with you. Violent Night last year, I thought it was fantastic.
I have to check out. Yeah. Some of the ones, and I'm interested to hear what you guys think, are Christmas Chronicles. I love, have you guys seen those with Kurt Russell? Kurt Russell as Santa and Goldie Hawn as Mrs. Claus. There's Christmas Chronicles 1 and 2. They're super fun. Full length. Check them out. I think, so they do bring up, like, is Santa, you know, the kids grew up in Lowell, Massachusetts, and the older son doesn't believe in Santa, but the daughter always does.
Right.
So I think you could watch them with your little kids, but I would check in whatever site you can see to check on that. But they're really fun and filled with joy, and they do like, Ev, have you seen those? You haven't seen Christmas Chronicles either.
I honestly haven't heard of them until you just mentioned them right now.
Really? So, I think they came out 2 or 3 years ago, maybe the second one 3 years ago, and we watch them every year.
Yeah, I've heard of them. I've not seen them. It didn't seem like my speed personally. So
before we veer back to the Grinch, I'm kind of wondering, Evan, is there something that you like? Oh, I do watch that every year, or I try to watch it every year. Are there things, because I have a few that might not ever even really fit in on this show, but I have a few that I really like. But I'm just sort of curious.
Yeah, I think this should be one. It hasn't been recently, but it should be. More stuff I've discovered more recently, or in some cases rediscovered, Nightmare Before Christmas. I really like. Sure. I've realized
that's Tim Burton.
Tim Burton. Yeah, that was back in theaters this year for its 30th anniversary. So I took my kids to see it, they loved it, especially seeing it on the big screen.
Love it.
I think that one's fun. That also, and then all the Community Christmas episodes, as well as the Boondocks episode. It's a Huey Freeman Christmas.
I don't know,
but it riffs on Charlie Brown Christmas, because that show riffs on Peanuts in a way that I like.
In that respect, I like the first South Park Christmas special from 1999. There have been other ones, but that one just sort of had, I guess that's actually the second one. It's like it's a collection of songs to tie into an album they put out. So there's not really a story, but the individual vignettes are pretty good.
That sounds very fun.
Yeah, I watched, and we try to watch it with them every year the last few years. We always watch Muppet Christmas Carol. And this is the first year when my daughter decided that she could hang in there through the Ghost of Christmas Future. She remembered it. She thought she was going to be upset, but it's the same thing. You know, it's like, well, if you hang in there, you'll be rewarded with the happy ending. And then the one that I grew up with that was on HBO, like, I don't know, 30 times every Christmas season, is Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas. And that is from the Henson Company. That is one that the kids kind of know that we're going to watch it every year. I just love it. It's simple. The music is great. And that's probably my number one. Muppet Christmas Carol, sort of like my wife kind of pushed that. You know, I liked it, but we sort of watch it every year because of how much my wife liked it. But what about you, Anne? It seems,
well, I was gonna say, you know what's funny, Christian, about that one is, you know how we get the texts in. I've gotten 3 or 4 text requests for Emmett Otter, and I'm like, that is definitely on our list, because Christian loves, like, always talks about that one. And that's on my list of ones to rewatch. I haven't seen it for years, but I remember loving that one as a kid. And on the ones that you like that you didn't just mention, but I always think of you, I was on a business call the other day and I just kind of joked around with folks. I'm like, so my side hobby, I do the Christmas Specials We Love podcast. And immediately one of the guys on the call was like, you have to do a Star Wars Christmas. And I almost fell out of my chair. I'm like, okay, one of the guys that co-hosts with me, his name is Christian, this and that. I'm like, he wants to see, and it was on our schedule for this year, but just trying to get everybody together.
Yeah, I mean, that isn't, you're not watching it because it's good.
He told me it was terrible, and it was weird songs.
If I may do some cross promotion, I am posting an interview that I did for a network I do shows on called Geekscape, I talked to a guy who directed a documentary about the Star Wars Christmas special. His name was Jeremy Kuhn, and it was fascinating. I think that getting that documentary in there would sort of make, you know, put it into context of the whole thing and the whole moment in time. But yeah, it's not amazing. Because it's good. It's, you know, that I have to stress that the Star Wars holiday special is not on any list because of how good it is.
Right. And he kind of had the same sentiment, and he was surprised, I think, just because I don't look like I would be a super Star Wars fan. So he was surprised that I even knew about it. And I was like, well, that's because Christian keeps me in the know with all informed. Things Star Wars, informed of yeah. all, thank you, Kev, informed on all things Star Wars and Marvel and all of that. But to answer your question, ones that are kind of not in the mainstream that are always on my list are Rob Lowe and Kristen Davis star in Holiday in the Wild, and she gets divorced and goes to Africa and works as a veterinarian where Rob Lowe's character is in Africa and takes care of orphaned baby elephants. Your daughter might love it because who doesn't love a baby elephant? So that's Agreed. One of my favorites. And nostalgically, I also love the John Cusack, Kate Beckinsale Serendipity that I've seen every single year.
Wait, and that's a Christmas movie, Serendipity?
Oh, yeah. That's how they meet when they're shopping at Bloomies, and they both grab the black gloves. And then they go back. Eugene Levy, who I've loved since Splash.
The best.
You know, he's now kind of known because of Schitt's Creek. But if he's in it, I'm watching it, and I've been a huge fan of his.
The best.
For decades. He is the funniest.
He is. He's amazing.
I think I've seen Best in Show 15 times. Don't judge. I digress.
No, and by the way, Why Not's a great, it's an amazing film. And by the way, I want to say, side note, huge Maria Menounos fan.
Yeah? I love him even more now. Oh, yeah.
They even dropped her name a bunch of times in Schitt's Creek because of it. Yeah, he's a big fan. You know, it's a very underrated Christmas movie, too, that doesn't get a lot of play. It's actually a little autobiographical about Dickens and how he was inspired to write A Christmas Carol. But a really nice film.
The Man Who Invented Christmas. Does that sound right, Kevin? Yeah, it's from 2017. And I'm seeing it, I remember this coming out, but that was the
good movie
year that my daughter Lucy was born a few weeks early on November 30th. So I didn't get out, but Christopher Plummer and Jonathan Pryce are both in it. So it sounds like a great one.
No, it's a great movie.
I definitely missed it.
No, you should really check it out. I'm going to have to bid everyone adieu. And I know you have an extensive dossier on production notes that you may want to get into. I'll leave it up to you all, unless we want to do a cliffhanger. I just want to say this. If this is our last episode for this Christmas season, please continue to give us your reviews on Apple Podcasts. Text us 351-251-2511. But spread the word about us, because we really do work hard to extend the spirit of the holiday and as well as preserve some of these classics. Ann and I work really hard to put these shows together. It costs us money to do it, in fact, rather than make money, but we're happy to do it. But knowing that we're reaching people makes a huge difference. So by doing all those things, you'll put enough gas in our tank so we come back next year and do Mr. Magoo and 'Twas the Night Before Christmas and the Star Wars special and
Emmett Otter.
And so on. Yeah, what did you say, Ann?
And Emmett Otter.
Emmett Otter. Yeah, I didn't even know about that one. But yeah, and so on and so forth. Anyway, all right, Ann and Christian and Evan, you take it from here. And by the way, Evan, I'm so inspired. It took us two seasons for you to like an episode.
I like Charlie Brown Christmas.
He always likes Charlie Brown.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Well,
I had a little bit of positivity. Yeah. Prior to this.
So he's not a total blockhead. See,
I'm not a total blockhead.
Because listen, I understand why, you know, we had it a lot easier growing up. You guys had it much, much harder. The bar was set high. The standards were way higher. It was a lot harder to be awarded for things. I know the parents were a lot harder on you, a lot more disciplined. I get it. I get why you guys, your generation, would be so negative. I understand the pain of carrying a $1,200 phone in your pocket from the age of 13 on. I do. I'm very empathetic to all of it and to all a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And please, for anyone that's annoyed by that comment, don't leave us a one star. That's not nice. You take it out of me. Don't take it out on Ann, Evan, and Christian, okay? you can just send me hate on somewhere. Find me on Instagram or somewhere to hate on me. Leave the rest of the people on this alone. All right. We'll all talk shortly.
Talk shortly, Kev.
Talk shortly, Kev.
I want to share a few of the tech shout-outs that we've gotten. They've been coming in, some people back and forth. Thanks, everybody, for your requests and all your great comments. They really do brighten my day. A few that I want to share. Linda from Melbourne, Florida. I just listened to part one of Santa Claus is Coming to Town at the gym. Laughed out loud. I got to thinking of Keenan Wynn. Did you know that his dad, Edwin, was in one of my favorite childhood movies, Mary Poppins? Funny that she mentioned that in this text today. Santa Claus and Coming to Town was on network TV last night. I couldn't believe it. I watched it for the first time. It came out in 1970. I was a freshman in college, so I never saw it. Next one from Christine in New Jersey. This is my favorite podcast. So nostalgic. Our family watches most of these specials every year, and it's so interesting to hear all of the behind the scenes. Thank you all for the research you do to put these shows together. Love the multi-gen points of view. As a 70s kid, I especially love hearing Ann and Kev's stories of growing up. You are my lunch break friends, so I get so excited when a new episode comes out. Keep them coming, and if you ever consider doing Emmett Otter's Christmas. And of course, we just mentioned that we did consider doing Emmett Otter, hopefully next season. From Anne Marie from Athol, Mass., hi again from Athol, Mass. Just finished listening to the Little Drummer Boy episode. Loved this special as a child and loved listening to your podcast. At the end of the episode, you talked about Old Sturbridge Village. Just went a few weeks ago to their Christmas by candlelight. Awesome way to enjoy the season. And yes, Sturbridge Village is still a wonderful place to visit, but it depicts a New England village from the 1830s, not the 1600s like you thought. And finally, from Sean in Indianapolis, I'll share this one. Hi, Ann. Listening to the Little Drummer Boy episode, please tell Kevin that his belief in the message of rising above it is not Pollyannish or unrealistic at all. In fact, far from it. Difficult to be sure, but not naive or impossible. But it takes determination, discipline, and intentionality to achieve. Talk shortly. So thanks to everybody again for the shout outs on text and Apple Podcast. Our text number again is 351-251-2511.
So I think that the thing that most people know about it, obviously, is that it's based on a book from Dr. Seuss. Theodore Geisel is his real name. So the book is from 1957. The special, as we talked about earlier, and aired for the first time in 1966. Great 1-2 punch. One year you get Charlie Brown, the next year you get the Grinch. As we talked about the animation, I couldn't agree more with Evan. Chuck Jones, known for Merry Melody, Looney Tunes, and all of that, he actually presented the idea, and he got a sponsorship to the tune of $315,000, which is the equivalent of $3 million today. And in the notes, the most interesting thing is that's four times the amount that Bill Melendez had secured for Charlie Brown Christmas. And
crazy, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. And it's funny to think about because they're both way up there in terms of recognition and people's favorites. And, they're just spending so much more on this one. Obviously, Boris Karloff, the voice of the Grinch and also the narrator, as we discussed earlier, not the singer of the song, though, You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch. That is Thurl Ravencroft. And interestingly enough, They just forgot to put him in the credits.
No, the poor guy.
Dr. Seuss had to call him and apologize. And Karloff, I don't think can hit some of those notes. But the thing I didn't realize, and that it actually peaked on the Billboard Hot 100 at number 32.
Yeah.
But this was the week ending January 2nd, 2021. This isn't like, you know, in the late 60s or early 70s. I mean, I hear it a lot. I mean, I where we live in Los Angeles, my wife grew up in the area. So there's a station, Coast, K-O-S-T, and they're the Christmas station. And honestly, yeah, the 20 years I've lived here, the Christmas music starts earlier and earlier. It's around November 9th now. At one point, it seemed like, all right, they must have had a memo that Veterans Day was where it started. And that's like, well, let's slide it back a little bit. That's one that we always hear. My kids know that song. They love that song. But this note is great, though, because obviously Dr. Seuss was very skeptical about the voice of Karloff for fear that it would make the Grinch too scary. But I do think that that's what works when it comes to that face turn, the wrestling term we used, where he becomes a good guy. It's like he still sounds like that, you know? I think, right, you know, a scraggly Ebenezer Scrooge, you know, when he has the moment where it turns, I think there's great portrayals of Ebenezer Scrooge, but I am, of course, partial, as we talked about, to Muppet Christmas Carol, because Michael Caine plays it 100% straight. It's never like, well, I'm just in a dopey Muppet movie, so I'm not going to play Scrooge the way that I should, you know?
Right.
So you feel like he is that terrible man that, you know, you see on the pages or you've seen before. And I think having the Grinch like, oh yeah, my daughter didn't want to watch him slither around like a snake, you know?
Right.
I think it just rewards it so much, you know? There's so much more payoff as a result of that.
Right. You didn't want the Grinch not to be a little bit scary. He had to be.
Right, exactly. And also in the cast, Rocky the Flying Squirrel herself, June Foray, huge fans of hers. She's Cindy Lou Who. Cindy Lou Who only has a couple of lines, and she makes them count, doesn't she? You know,
well, with that big budget, they could afford to pay her.
Well, yeah, I know the Rocky the Flying Squirrel money. That's the big line item in the budget. But you know, it's just with those big eyes again. The great Chuck Jones animation, the perfect match of the June Foray voice. I mean, obviously everybody knows the Grinch. Yes, they know Max, but there isn't anybody who doesn't walk away not thinking about Cindy Lou Who. You know,
100%. It's like,
Santa, why are you stealing all of our stuff? And you know, I think that that's kind of great. The interesting thing is that there's a voice for Max the dog listed in your notes, Anne. And until I saw that, I was like, oh, does Max talk? He just grunts, right? Just a couple of like that, right?
Yep. And you know, it's funny. I almost didn't include those in my notes, Christian, because I'm like, yeah, all right, did I just zone out every single time Max had anything to say? Because
yeah,
I don't remember him having any vocal participation in this, but because of who it was, Dallas McKinnon of Gumby and Buzzard from Woody Woodpecker fame, right, I was like, I got to give the guy a shout out because my husband even has a tattoo of Buzz Buzzard. So we're big fans of his here in the Sleeman Estate. So I had to put him in there, although I don't remember him really saying much either.
Yeah, it seemed like it was mostly like facial. Again, the great Chuck Jones animation really telling the story for Max, you know.
Yeah.
Very interesting thing in the notes, though, is that the special did not have a script and it was presented visually. I mean, I guess because it's based on a book. You know, right, what I mean? It's a little bit easier. You're just kind of sitting there with the book. But Anne, this was the number that you referenced earlier. 22,000 total drawings made up the entire special. And Chuck Jones working on more than 1,500 of them, just himself. You know, obviously there's a team that works on any animation, but 1,500 of those are actual Chuck Jones.
Right, daunting.
Since the major networks had switched away from black and white to color television by 1966, this led to the Grinch becoming green as opposed to white. Because if you see the book, all you have to do is see the cover of the book, you know that the Grinch is white. And it was a little jarring when I was a kid because I definitely saw the special long before I ever saw the book.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, that's a little odd. You know, it's like The Wizard of Oz. The book has silver slippers, not ruby slippers, because they want to really use that Technicolor. And whoever insisted on that production note, I think it goes a long way. You know, he's the iconic look of this character is, I think, because he's green.
Yeah. I wonder if it would have been as popular if he was white. He would have looked too much like the Abominable Snowman.
Yeah, he would have. It's like, okay, so he's just another Bumble. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Chuck Jones was inspired by the color of an ugly green rental car. He looked at it and thought that's exactly the color the Grinch should be. I love that.
I love that.
Yeah, that's where it came from.
And you can see that color in the cars of that era, right? The late 60s cars.
The Grinch is based on a real person. So I guess there's an article on looper.com and it references Dr. Seuss. Ted Geisel, Theodore Geisel, was brushing his teeth in the morning after Christmas, December 1956, when he noticed he didn't feel right. I noted a very Grinchish countenance in the mirror. Something had gone wrong with Christmas, I realized, or more likely with me, which, you know, having the presence of mind, the self-awareness to know, like, oh, it probably wasn't a problem with Christmas. It's probably,
I think it was me.
Yeah, you know, so, you know, that, well, maybe a little bit too much who hash, you know, it's hard to say. You can never have too much who pudding, but you can have too much who hash. And so it inspired him to write the Christmas tale, and it did motivate him to rediscover something about Christmas that obviously he had lost. It took him a few weeks to write the book. He did have some trouble coming up with the ending, as he didn't want the story to be overtly religious. And then, of course, he came up with the idea of them all sitting down to enjoy the roast beast. Yeah, there's not really a secular element to this. You know, I mean, Charlie Brown surprisingly ends in a very secular way, you know, Linus with the lights, please, and all that. And right. From content of this era, that's what you would expect, but it is a very non-denominational ending. Obviously it is a Christmas story. There's, you know, there's no mistaking it for a holiday story, you know? And you note that the Grinch was actually Dr. Seuss's favorite character, more than Horton, more than Marvin K. Mooney, more than anybody, according to his biographer, Brian J. Jones. He even had Grinch in all caps on his vanity license plate.
I loved that.
I love that. Because you imagine you get cut off, you know, somebody's trying to, you know, get in front of you on the freeway and
right,
they have the Grinch license plate. And you're like, well, of course. Of course. No wonder that that happened. Until I see it written out right here in front of me, I did not realize the song was called Fahu Fores.
I didn't either.
They were Princeton. Saying Dahu Dores.
I think really that's the second line. I think
literally.
It's...
Oh, so Fahu Fores and Dahu Dores are both in there?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I thought it was Dahu Dores.
Yeah, that's what Dores. I always hear people call it.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I literally watched it last night and I was like, oh, yeah, Dahu Dores. But I guess it was made to imitate classical Latin. And after the special aired, the studio received letters asking for a translation from people who believed it to be real Latin.
Which I love.
Yeah, I love that. That must have been fun, you know, for Dr. Seuss to hear that people thought that was great.
It reminded me of when, not to digress too much back to The Great Pumpkin, but when Schultz wrote The Great Pumpkin, scholars from around the world, remember, hit him up. Seeing what their where he got the idea for The Great Pumpkin, he's like, it was really just to have somebody like Santa for the show, and there wasn't any actual, you know, biblical reference or reference to him. So that reminded me of that. It was funny.
There's a great note to a moment where we referenced it earlier. The Grinch reacting to Max's foolishness breaks the fourth wall, glances to the side, stares at the audience, and it matches up with a famous gesture of Oliver Hardy, one of Chuck Jones' favorite actors. And Jones would use this same gesture in cartoons with Bugs Bunny and Porky Pig, obviously, you know, two of his most famous creations, but two of the most famous animated characters of all time.
Yeah.
I love this note from sort of what we were talking about earlier is, you know, the Grinch that we tend to see is still the cranky Grinch who hates Christmas. He's not the redeemed Grinch. You know, it almost makes you wonder what happened in Christmas 1967, you know, that all of a sudden he's back, you know, not on board. Every year this guy decides he wants
he wants to,
you know, steal Christmas. And then
that's what I'm talking about.
Give it back. Like every year. So for what is that? That's like 55 years now. It's like enough already. Stop stealing it. But so a few kids from New Jersey wrote directly to Dr. Seuss complaining they had the last name Grinch, and they would get teased every year around Christmas time because their name was synonymous with a monster. And Seuss writes back, this is the important part. No, the Grinch is a hero, a changed man. Tell those other kids, it's not where you start, it's where you end up.
Don't you love that?
I do love that. And just imagining having the last name Grinch, you know?
Terrible.
Maybe we'll end on this one, and one of the most random of all the facts, that the Grinch's small heart could definitely lead to his grouchiness, but then his heart grows three sizes, which is a little bit far-fetched and too sciencey for some, but interesting nonetheless. According to Dr. David Cass, a cardiology professor and Grinch scholar, in fact, this could be the guy who's the world-leading expert in how the Grinch stole Christmas.
I think we may have found another world-leading expert. But
because he's really a snake. He's not just any snake. He's a python, Dr. Cass explained. A python heart grows significantly after eating. Isn't that the gist of what it says there, Anne?
Yes. The cardiologist points to two clues that that suggest the Grinch is that kind of snake. The fact that his heart growth occurs around the time of a large meal of roast beef. And when he meets Cindy Lou Who, the character slithers around serpent-like.
I do love that. Yeah.
I thought that was such a funny, funny article to read and such a funny note. And I think that's a perfect way to sum up the Grinch's production.
I was a little sorry to hear you didn't like it so much, Anne, because I pushed for this one because I honestly, legitimately thought this was one everybody liked in terms of the four of us. And because so many people had asked for it, you know,
I know. And I didn't realize I didn't like it as much until I rewatched it. Like I said to my husband, I'm like, why don't we watch this one every year? And then it was on. I'm like, oh, and it's not that I totally hate it. It's just kind of basic and bleh. So I don't want to hate it. And then when I did the research,
it's fine. It just, you know, it's hard to imagine. It's like Charlie Brown and Rudolph might be, and I'm sure you can, of course, find detractors for anything, especially in this day and age.
Right.
But those maybe then are the only two that almost everyone's like, well, yeah, of course I love those, you know?
Right. Right. So yeah, it was one of those moments too. I did the research for it after. And then like, to your point, Ev, like was reminded, like I never thought about the guy from Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies being the part of the production team and all of that. So doing the research, I definitely grew to re-like it a little bit more, but yeah, I was just like, yeah, we probably won't cover that because there's not much there. But of course, as always on the Christmas Specials We Love podcast, we can do deep dives and get into it. And there is a lot there. And like you said, Christian, we got so many requests for Grinch. So we kind of had to do it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think it might be fun for next year to try and figure out what it's not our personal top five, just what are the most popular Christmas specials. Leave movies out of it just for a moment.
Yeah.
And I think this Charlie Brown and Rudolph would have to be in contention for that top five.
I now, think we saw that Charlie Brown was number one.
Yeah,
I don't remember where we got that note from, but
there's
I'm pretty
so
sure.
So many that I saw as a kid that even as a kid, I don't know how good they were. Like Yogi Bear has one right. And it was a two-parter. My wife loves the Alvin and the Chipmunks Christmas special. She has a soft spot for it. It's not great. The animation is actually fantastic in it. And
okay.
You know, and they do have the Chipmunk Christmas song in it. It's
okay.
Kind of starts with it. So you get that, but you get a whole story that, you know, you're just like, you can tell that's one of those ones that fits the example of if you watched it all the time as a kid, you probably have a soft spot for it because I had seen it, but I didn't watch it every year, but my wife did. So you know, that jumps a few spots in our Hot 100 countdown of Christmas specials.
I love that.
Do you have anything like that where somebody else in your family like really likes one that you're like, yeah, it's all right?
Well, Grinch for sure. Everybody wants to bring back Nestor, the long-eared donkey. And I feel like that's going to be one of those ones we watched as a kid that I loved, even though it made me cry, that I think now I might not like as much. What other one do I think is overrated? I don't know.
And I'll just, I
like most of them. We start watching Christmas specials here in August. Literally, like the one I mentioned before, Holidays in the Wild, which I highly recommend. We watched that in August. And we, then we
as build... we talked about on a past episode, we always put up the Christmas tree the Sunday after Thanksgiving. So that's when the classics, and we kind of let the kids pick the first ones. And I'd be remiss if I didn't point out that Chipmunk Christmas is also from Chuck Jones' studio. I don't know if he personally did it, but it's in that style. So that is why the animation, I think, is so great in that. But, you know, the all the Chipmunk stories that you'll ever see are kind of one note. It's like all building up to Dave Seville yelling Alvin at some point, you know. But Evan, have you even seen the Chipmunks Christmas special, or maybe
I have not, and I am not Chipmunks. No, and I'm kind of grateful for that. Oh. I think I was. That's largely because the first thing I remember of Chipmunks was the CGI live action ones that came out when I was a kid.
Yeah,
no, and that's, I have not heard a single good thing about them.
Yeah,
maybe the old show is good, but those have a very bad reputation.
You go ahead and put that on the list for next year. I think, Anne, it's.
I think we have to.
I think it's important to have on there at this point. Anyway, and by the way, June Foray does the voice of Mrs. Claus in the Chipmunk Christmas special.
Man, she was all over the place.
Yeah, and Frank Welker, who most people know as Scooby-Doo, is both a doctor and Santa Claus in that. So, look, there's something to it that I'm because I see it every year, and it's not on my list, but it's interesting when you get some of those, you know. Evan, were there ones that as a kid, this one's on again? Why can't we get to the ones that are my favorites?
I don't know that there really was. Like, I mean, we had a few. I don't know that there were any that I really ended up not liking as a kid. Maybe I'm just not remembering them. I know one, and this is a movie rather than a special, but Home Alone has not aged great for me. I just...
Look, I didn't want to interrupt Kevin when he brought it up. I've never seen Home Alone. I was 14 when it came out. It was the last movie that I was interested in seeing. And by the time that, I'm old now, I'm like, I could see watching with my kids. Like we've watched like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids and stuff like that. But, there's not really the demand for it. They're not that excited about it. But it just came out in exactly that window where if I was a little bit older, I probably would have seen it. But at 14, I'm like, I don't want to go see that dumb kid movie.
I think that movie hits best when you're like 8 or 9.
Yeah.
Like that's when you love those. And like you can be a little older and enjoy it too. I think just Chris Columbus, his sensibility, just it doesn't work for me.
You have to be into slapstick because the character Marv, if you like slapstick, is hilarious.
He's just about the best slapstick character. Yeah. Like this side is like a literal cartoon. Like as a live action actor, I don't know if there's anybody better. But
he plays with Joe Pesci, Christian, as like the guys who rob the house.
Well, is that Daniel Stern?
I don't know his name.
That's the other actor. Yeah. No, he's the voiceover in The Wonder Years, Daniel Stern, the Fred Savage version.
Okay.
So yeah, he's that was kind of like a very big time for him, the late 80s, early 90s, because he's also in City Slickers, so he was very active in those years, but just getting some great work all in that time span. And it's interesting when you think about like Toy Story being made in the mid 90s. You look at the cast and you're like, oh, that's when you would hire Cliff from Cheers and Tim Allen from Home Improvement. And of course, Tom Hanks. You would hire Tom Hanks tomorrow. That's not the point. But just some of the people in it, and you're like, oh yeah, that's really from that moment in time. And sometimes it's a nice snapshot. And some of the things that I like to watch from childhood, sometimes it really is just like, oh yeah, I kind of remember that time,
Yeah. And quick shout out to Tim Allen before we wrap things up here. Yeah. I love Tim Allen in The Santa Claus. If you haven't seen those, Tim Allen becomes Santa Claus. It's Santa Claus. There's two or three of them. There's definitely two. Those are fantastic. Have you guys not seen those either?
I've seen the first one. There's also a series on Disney Plus, and I believe it started this year, might have been season 2, but there's a Santa Claus series with Tim Allen. Yeah.
Okay. So I haven't seen it. So check that out.
I'm not endorsing it. I'm just letting people know that it's out there.
Yeah, the movie's good. Either way to it,
decide if it's good for you or not.
Cool. Any closing thoughts?
Well, I think one of the reasons why Kevin, you know, circled me for this show is because he knows how excited I get at Christmas time. And look, having two small kids, it definitely, you know, my Christmas spirit was big, but it gets even bigger. I'm taking literally tomorrow. We're picking the kids up from school. We're driving about 2 hours to the mountains. There's an attraction called Santa's Village.
Nice.
And this, as I've alluded to before, this might be the last year that someone in our house is all in on Santa. You know, there right. might be some more questions by next year. So we're like, we got to go this year, and it's going to be great. And
I love that.
Breakfast with Santa, and we're going to stay over. And we went 2 years ago, and it just pissed down rain so hard the whole time. We wanted to take them sledding. They've never done that because they grew up in Southern California. And so we're hoping for that part. But the Santa's Village part is going to be great. And
that'll be amazing.
Right. Yeah. And then we'll go right down to my in-law's house where we always spend Christmas Eve. So except for 1 year when my son Felix was sick, we always spend the night at my wife's parents' house. And so that's really the only place they've ever really known Christmas.
Wow,
so,
that's sweet. Yeah. I love that.
So, Ev?
Is this closing thoughts on like the whole season or just the Grinch?
Everything, whatever.
I don't know. I guess my Christmas thesis statement is this is maybe going to come off as too much middle grounding, but I think if you enjoy this, I don't think anyone should be allowed to take it away from you. But also, if you're not a Christmas person, like, I think that's fair. And
sure,
I think like it's okay to avoid it.
I don't know if we have a lot of non-Christmas people following the Christmas special.
I know we probably don't. And that might sound really neutral, but I truly am. I've probably said this on some other episode. I am a very firm believer in that between the days of Black Friday and January 6th, I don't think anyone should be allowed to like request that Christmas music be turned off. Like, I think those days, like, that's just, those are for the people who love that. They get the say. But outside of those days, I think anyone has a right to request, like, hey, not in season. I don't want to hear it. Like, I think that is a fair compromise. Like, you give the people who like Christmas, give it to them during that time. And, like, I think if you are the biggest Scrooge, like, deal with it. But outside of it, the Scrooges do rule. Out in the other 11 months, they're say, I think it goes. Because you get it, you get that month, and like it gets
6 weeks,
lot.
Really.
6 weeks, yeah. Yeah, it's more than a month.
You definitely get more than a month, I agree. And Evan, I'm glad you invoked the name of Ebenezer Scrooge, because you were getting dangerously close to saying, keep Christmas in your own way and let me keep it in mine, which of course is directly from Dickens.
I was nicknamed Ebenezer Scrooge by a friend in seventh grade.
Oh, I love that.
I don't know why it took that long to happen.
Look, and I think it's just like, look, I get it. It's got to be frustrating, you know, when you talk to people who were not raised Christian, not raised with Christmas. They're like, oh, it's Christmas time. I'm like, I get it, but can you please let us keep it in our way? I get it. You don't want to hear it when you're at the mall, but other than Adam Sandler is responsible for the only real Hanukkah song and the only real Hanukkah movie. So get to work. Get some better songs out there, you know, and then they can play them as well.
Yeah.
Adam Sandler Hanukkah song I hear every year. I'm sorry, what were you saying, Evan?
No, well, you can I think if in private you want to listen to Christmas music outside of those days, that's fine. I just think you're not allowed to share it with anyone else or force anyone else to listen to it during that time. Just like you're allowed to listen to non-Christmas music during December. I don't think in private, but if you're throwing a Christmas party and you throw on Blink-182 and someone says, hey, put on Mariah Carey, you kind of got to put on Mariah Carey.
Well, if it's a Christmas Blink 182 party. Did a Christmas album, then you would be.
Maybe they have. To, I just right. picked a random.
I don't think they have, but.
I don't think they have.
There's some very interesting Christmas albums out there for sure. So.
Which we should cover probably next season. So.
Well, you know, look, right, I'm gonna work in one more shameless plug because personal podcast, The Blackcast, I literally just did an episode last night where I had the gang from the podcast I've been on a few times. It does have a swear word in the title. It's called Shitty Song of the Week. And I had the three of them on, and we went track by track through the Star Wars Christmas album, which is a completely different
in the movie.
Pile of crap than the Star Wars holiday special. They're two completely different entities. And we went through all 9 songs on that. And most people, including my guests on the show, didn't even realize there was a Star Wars Christmas album. And by the way, it is not a Star Wars holiday album. The holiday special is definitely a holiday special. They make up a Wookiee holiday for it. This is a Christmas. They're talking about Santa. There's references to all sorts of things. So my podcast, Blackcast, BLADTCAST, and of course, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, I do Who Are These Broadcasters on Who Are These Podcast Network. But it has been a joy, a festive joy, to celebrate Christmas with everyone. And very excited to have been
a part. It has.
It has, yeah. Happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and we'll talk shortly.
Shortly.
Talk shortly.